Dear listeners, this podcast is created by the Linguistov team.
If you want to practice and improve your English in a fun and creative way, please visit our website www.linguistov.ru.
And if you want to share your opinion and ideas regarding our discussions, you can email us at info@linguistov.ru.
The weather is going to be beautiful today, and
we have a plan.
I'm not sure in my capabilities as an actress, though.
Well, we gotta practice then.
Okay.
Okay, just express the genuine surprise.
Surprise and admiration.
Oh my god!
Okay. I can't do that!
Why not?
It's not exactly admiration.
It's a surprise. It's a genuine shock. You're shocked. This is the way I show my admiration, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I've never seen you then showing admiration. Well, just the first time.
We don't live together. I mean, every time I see you, that's basically my reaction.
Really?
Yeah, of course.
You have to record it.
Yeah. No problem.
What about Lola? Does she show her admiration in a certain way when she's
she can't see the screen? Actually, only the art that she can touch.
Well, what about what about the dog things?
Like the dog art?
Yeah.
Well, dog art? She can, I presume. she can admire them.
Okay. Does she do the same?
You mean the poo? This is what they create, an artist's creation. Pooism.
It can vary in texture, in color, in shape.
This is going nowhere.
This is trash.
All right. So
I guess that was our introduction. It reminds me of Play-Doh, the dog's art.
Play-Doh, what is it?
Play-Doh is the thing that children play with.
Oh, Play-Doh! Okay, got it. Yeah, it's certainly... But, I mean, the color, maybe, again.
I guess Daniel is not very happy with this conversation. So, how are you?
Yeah.
You know, and it's early morning, and
yeah, so it's
quite early.
It seems I haven't slept enough.
We watched. I always forget it.
You always forget everything. Not only it.
No, yeah.
So was it a movie or some kind of?
It was Cloud Atlas.
Oh yes, yes.
Was it your first time when you watched it?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah. I liked it.
So
I think that I liked... there were two episodes that I enjoyed. The scene with the Scottish men. Do you remember it? When they...
elderly people.
Elderly people, when they got out of this elderly people's house.
Uh-huh.
And they went to a bar.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was like a group of Scottish men.
Right. Not surprising you liked this.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What was the second one?
And the second one was about this couple, the gay couple.
Why did you like it?
Because of the scene when they broke plates, and he said that no boundaries exist, that every boundary is a convention, that there are no boundaries. I liked it a lot.
I liked the last episode with the future.
What was the episode?
Distant future? Well, just the whole idea.
It's not bad.
Oh, good. Good. I tried listening to the audiobook, and I couldn't. It was way too complicated to stay concentrated because it was, you know, the scenes jumping one from...
I guess it's better just to read it.
Well, I guess so, but yeah. I just thought maybe I can combine walking with Lola.
Oh, really?
And didn't see
the The only audiobook that I could listen to was Harry Potter, because it was so
vivid.
Yeah, it was easy, very easy to follow. And then I tried to listen to Jerome K. Jerome, Three Men in a Boat. It was absolutely impossible to listen to. I tried Ray Bradbury. I tried.
Oh, Ray Bradbury is way too complicated.
I tried his short stories, but still.
I.
Ray Bradbury complicated. His prose is considered one of the most simplified.
For the audiobook.
Meaning to stay concentrated. Like when you read, it's not a big deal, but when you listen. Or even if you're in your bed, then you just start falling asleep.
Yeah,
if you're walking on the street, you just get distracted, and it's hard to stay concentrated. I enjoyed the I actually know the name of the reader, but it's pretty good. The audiobook is pretty good.
Did you listen to it in English?
In English, yeah, no German for me, because sorry. So, dear listeners, so here's a question for you. If you guys listen to us, do you like audiobooks? You're welcome to leave your comments.
We have recently recorded another short story, so there is going to be a test for you.
Yeah, just yesterday we recorded another short story.
How was it called?
It was called The Child of Mars.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
So you're testing her.
I do remember that. Yeah.
And how did it end?
Oh.
Okay.
I never remember how this story ends. I guess it's nice. It always comes as a surprise for me.
You can just get one movie and watch it every night.
True.
And laugh.
Fears are growing in Libya of a stand between the ruling Muslim Brotherhood, Justice and Construction Party, and the opposition forces. The rebels are blockading key oil ports. The capital, Tripoli, is braced for armed confrontation. Every night gunshots pierce the air. Leaders in the provinces of Kyrenaika and Fezzan, provinces where the great part of the nation's oil is located, are considering secession from the center. Rebel militia battalions are mobilizing across the country. With oil exports decreasing by 70%, the government has threatened to use force to capture oil terminals held by armed protesters, raising the risk of civil war. The country's Prime Minister, Ali Zeidan, has taken a hard line with protesters, threatening to storm the two biggest oil ports by force and warning international oil companies that their ships will be attacked if they buy oil from the rebels. The demand of rebellious provinces is autonomy, and they are led by a relative of Libya's former king, who was toppled decades ago.
What's going on in Libya right now? Because after they killed my favorite dictator, I kind of...
The situation in Libya can be described in one word, upheaval.
Mm-hmm. Well, do they have
everything is a mess, it is hard to distinguish between the government and the rebels and, tens of other groups. And the article where from I knew it, called this situation Egypt-style one. But in Libya it is all more sharp, because the country was one of the greatest oil exporters, and Egypt is not. I still wonder if these European countries and USA predicted what is happening now, or if they didn't.
There was a guy who went to a school with a lot of guns and decided to shoot everyone, and he encountered some woman there who didn't actually work there, some kind of librarian, and she somehow convinced him not to do that.
Maybe she was a fan of Let's Talk About Kevin, and she's like, did you watch it? I really recommend. You gotta watch it.
Yeah.
And you see how it ends.
So I guess, I don't know the details, I didn't tell the details, how she convinced him, but it's kind of
I don't know.
So
surprising.
How did the whole story come to?
Did the woman boast
that?
No, I don't. I think that maybe the school official somehow gave it away, but I don't think. I don't think that she came out to. She called the newspaper and said
she called WikiLeaks.
Listen. Yeah.
Well, WikiLeaks is a political site.
Well,
she decided to go higher.
Yeah. So. How can you convince a person?
I wonder why things like that usually happen in the United States. Is it a good thing or a bad thing that they don't happen in Russia?
They were just starting to happen in Russia.
So
you remember
last time? Just have to wait a bit.
Yes.
I mean, that's that massive, that you know, on such a large scale.
Why do they do that?
I guess they are just having some psychological problems. Why are they having some psychological problems? Maybe they are.
Have you ever heard of this?
Antidepressants.
Was it this week or last week? There was some kind of Australian guy, baseball player, I guess. He was shot in the United States by three teenagers.
In the United States.
Three American teenagers. They were just driving on the street. And they had a gun.
So is that a coincidence?
One of them was like 15, the second 16 and 17.
Hang on.
I'm telling you the story.
Okay.
Yeah. So three guys, three teenagers, they were driving on the street and there was this Australian baseball player. He was jogging on the street and they decided just to shoot him. Just for fun. They said it was for fun. Imagine it.
So anyway, the second question for our listeners. Why are incidents like that happen in the United States?
Yeah, what's your opinion?
Is it a coincidence or not? What's your opinion?
Yeah.
No, I think it is not a coincidence. The United States is considered and is the most warlike state in the world. So maybe their citizens look at their soldiers, so they are fighting here and there. Well, let's fight too.
Among each other?
Mm.
I mean, the American soldiers, they are fighting the enemy, yeah? But why do you go to school and shoot innocent children?
I'm talking about the spirit, this warlike spirit.
I guess it comes from
the
Second Amendment, when you have a gun and you have to defend yourself somehow. It's not exactly the army type, but I guess it comes from that time. When you have to have guns. And you are allowed to shoot anyone who trespasses your territory.
I don't think if they forbid guns, there would be less crimes.
No, I'm not talking about the fact that the guns exist there and are allowed. I mean, it's a part of their mentality, I guess.
Are they legal?
This is what I'm talking about, the mentality.
Yes,
the warlike mentality.
But it's not because of the soldiers, it's because of the Second Amendment.
I'm not saying that the soldiers are the reason, the core reason, just an example.
I think it's not about the mentality. I think it's about the nation being generally tired of its problems.
Tired or bored?
Tired and bored. It's a consequence of what has been happening. I can't really answer this question, what exactly has been happening, but I guess it's not in the mentality. It's in the core of the situation, I guess. But I'm not sure.
Mm. It's kind of
difficult. I have a very vague idea.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's an interesting question.
I agree.
I would really like to read your ideas about that. Just recently, we were watching a movie, Marley and Me, and there was an episode when the main character, columnist, finally saw his only reader, and he said, "Oh, you are the one."
You are the one. Yes. So for us, who do we have? We have Ryan.
We have Ryan. Lena. Is she our regular listener?
Moose.
So we would really like to read the questions from the one. The one and the only one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, maybe Ryan has some answers. Who knows?
Wow. Ryan?
Yeah. Write to us. You're kind of an American.
She's an insider.
Yeah.
Beware pigeon apocalypse. Moscow had become a hotbed of Newcastle disease, a bird disease that can be transmitted to humans. Pigeons have reportedly been acting as if drugged, stumbling and reacting slowly to humans. Strange, or else flying into the faces of passerby and falling to the ground. Journalists write, before death, they start to resemble zombies. They lose their orientation and fly without a sense of direction, then fall, already lacking the strength to get up. Some cases of salmonella infection had also been found in dead birds, but the experts say that the epidemic was already coming to an end. Some bloggers have said that the pigeons' fatalities mark the coming of the end times, pointing to the Tsarist era mystic Grigory Rasputin's alleged prediction of the apocalypse on August 23rd, 2013.
Is it tomorrow?
I guess yes.
You have to.
Yes, I'm going to buy an umbrella against, you know, falling pigeons.
Falling pigeons. That's nice.
Umbrella will be not enough. Well, I actually heard about it. I think I told you about a friend of mine who rents a room in an apartment, and her landlady has a lot of pigeons on her balcony. And she told me that her landlady is scared to death because of this epidemic, and she tries her best to protect her pets.
So they are
not herself, pets.
Well, of course, she's trying to protect her birds.
Babies,
yeah. And she doesn't let them out. Why not? It's very possible if we think...
But it's kind of a strange sign of apocalypse.
Not very strange.
Not strange.
For the
Christians, it's not strange. But when you know, Jesus Christ was being baptized,
okay,
there was a pigeon
who fell.
No, not fell, but above him, showing that he is the one.
Oh, okay. So it's
so
like a symbol.
It's like it's very symbolic if pigeons start dying.
But I guess if it is if the apocalypse is coming, it has to be like a number of.
You have to wait.
Mm. Well, has it not been the number of symbols, these earthquakes, this war that never ends, in the Middle East,
we have to get ready.
Floods in Asia.
But it's been started from the, I don't know.
Well, it's a slow process.
The world
from the very beginning,
God gives
everybody
a chance.
Because I think that
not
it
everybody.
Has to be like...
these things kill a lot of people. People shouldn't be ready for apocalypse. This is the idea. Why else we need apocalypse if we are ready for it? If you go underground, apocalypse comes. Everyone survives. And what is
the point?
The idea? What is the point?
Oh, okay. So it has to be very unexpected. It
has to be very unexpected.
But at the same time,
okay,
there has to be some kind of alibi for God saying, I have warned you, man. Haven't you seen my pigeons?
Accent as a Indian, you think?
Yes.
I think probably.
What the hell are you doing? I have sent you so many pigeons from hell. Heaven.
Kind of Arabic.
I had a boss, Dunkin' Donuts in the United States. He was from India. And he had this kind of accent.
I love
remember.
It.
And he would call me every morning, Asya, where the hell are you? So I remember that.
I had my bosses were Arabs. They were from Algeria, if I'm not mistaken. And when they didn't want their employees, you know, I understand what they talk about.
Spoke
they spoke French, but they didn't know that I spoke French as well.
They didn't know that there was a spy.
I never told them that.
Well,
it was kind of interesting.
That was smart of you.
Oh, I know.
So you were prepared for the apocalypse. Maybe they were the chosen ones.
Who?
Those Arabs. They were discussing
okay.
They were discussing the approaching apocalypse.
Okay.
And they thought that nobody understood them, but there was one spy.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Okay.
Education is one of the most resonant topics in Russian social discourse. The new trend of the government is to exercise as much control as possible over the facilities of higher education, that is, universities. Now is the time of the nationwide monitoring of universities. Our Prime Minister, Dmitry Medvedev, is the person who lately has been talking more than enough about social issues and media, including education. According to his words, the government wants to comprise a list of all universities there are and estimate their efficiency. The thing is that a year ago the same procedure was initiated by our president, Vladimir Putin, who said that there were too many universities in Russia. So said, so done, of 502 state universities, 136 were acknowledged inefficient. This time they are going to try commercial ones too. which makes the task far more difficult. A new criterion was added: the number of alumni who managed to officially find a job. The problem is that graduates with degree in humanities seldom go to labor exchange.
I agree that in Russia there are too many universities, and I mean, I don't think that closing them would be the only thing to do, but I just don't like that they call these educational institutions universities.
Mm-hmm.
I think university is something
serious. Like
serious,
Moscow,
yeah. You can't have 300 universities
mm-hmm.
in one country. It's supposed to be like, I don't know, a dozen,
mm-hmm.
maybe 20 max, but not so many. So maybe changing the status of these educational centers would be a good idea.
Yeah,
making changing the
colleges.
Name, college or school
mm-hmm.
or, don't know.
Yes, but maybe but by saying there are too many universities, he meant just like that, that many facilities have this status unfairly.
But the consequence of this thing was that a lot of them closed, resulting in unemployment. A lot of teachers lost their jobs, and a lot of students were simply out of...
The administration of many of these, well, not closed, but universities acknowledged inefficient. The administration of them was fraudulent. And, well, they took money that was given
mm-hmm.
them by the government and took them.
For example, in Naberezhny Chelny, we used to have like 6 universities
mm-hmm.
there. Now we only have 2 or 3. But what happened with those which closed? They ceased to exist. And the students who were studying there at that time, who were current
mm-hmm.
students, they were transformed to other universities, which were maybe not exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them had to change their major,
mm-hmm.
their field of study.
Some universities are going to be transformed into academies or institutions, and some are going to be merged with others.
But I think it's right. I
mm-hmm.
like this idea, because there can't be a lot of universities in just one country.
What upsets me is that criterion, that new criterion, which is announced, the number of alumni go into a labor exchange and finding an official job. And these faculties which teach humanities, their graduates actually seldom go to labor exchange, because what job is going to be found there for them?
I guess that
many of them go freelance.
It happens because we in Russia are not ready for these kinds of jobs yet. We don't know what to do with psychologists, with jobs like that. So we teach, I mean, not we,
mm-hmm.
we mean, I mean, the
mm-hmm.
universities. They teach, they give knowledge on these fields, but they don't know how to use these professionals.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually they either change their field
mm-hmm.
or they just go freelance, which is not a bad thing, actually. If not English or art, what major would you choose?
Oh, that's a very good question.
Gardening?
Yeah.
Agriculture.
Oh, yeah, why not?
Agriculture, yeah.
My mother graduated the faculty.
Medicine?
Medicine, no. I don't know. I think that I wouldn't have enough courage to go to medicine.
So gardening, agriculture.
maybe also the culinary art. That would be nice.
Cooking.
Yeah, cooking. I would love to be.
But that's not you don't need to finish to graduate from the university.
No, of course not in university or some kind of college or
yeah.
whatever you need to go to.
Bethune,
correct, yeah. I would love to become a chef.
Well,
it's kind of very difficult.
You can't do it even not going to.
I know, but I think that there are certain things that you have to know, because I worked in a restaurant and I talked to chefs.
Well, Matthias, for example, he never finished any kind of institution. He just went and started.
But,
cooking.
You know, I would love to have a certain basis.
I would be
a
doctor.
Things.
I would like to be a doctor.
You would be
surgeon.
You would be a good vet.
No, no. surgeon.
Surgeon?
Or a surgeon.
Oh, you wanted to go to an army?
I was kidding.
Okay.
I'd like to study medicine. Scully was my
yeah,
idol,
right.
So.
I when I was watching
how's
this
that called in English? You just recently asked me.
No, I wanted to ask you the whole procedure, how it is called. It's called post-mortem. But
post-mortem?
Pat...
That
something like that, something with path.
What are you talking about?
It's a profession of a guy, of a person who performs postmortems.
Pathognatum.
In Russian, it's kind of easy. It's kind of easy. Or maybe it's different in English. Who knows?
Pathologist. It's even simpler.
Yeah, pathologist.
So I would make a good pathologist.
What does it mean, patho? Is it illness or how is it? What's the etymology?
Yes. Pathology.
Is illness.
The science, knowledge of illness.
No, pathologist, I guess, is a specialist who specializes in pathologies.
It's kind of romantic.
Romantic,
especially
you
after
bodies.
Yeah, absolutely alone
the
with
the queen of
night.
The undead.
At night.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just, I think it's for fans of the X-Files, it's kind of...
Yeah.
I wanted to become one as well.
Yeah, for the fans of zombie films.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of nice. Especially, she always does it at night. Yeah.
Yeah.
She has
at
this...
night, having
night.
Her gloves on.
Yeah. And not a lot of light.
Not a lot of light
time.
And the recorder.
The recorder, yeah.
And a lot of complicated, unpronounceable words. So, dear listeners, question number 3.
Would you like to be a pathologist?
Are you a fan, were you a fan of the legendary X-Files? Waiting for your answers.
Oh, we get yes, no, yes, no.
Well, and some details, like, did you watch every episode? Did you sometimes?
Who do you like more, Mulder or Scully?
No, Mulder or Scully, yeah, that's probably even a better question.
Mm-hmm.
Mulder or Scully, and why? Of course.
Damn.
Mulder or Scully. Oh, I gotta post a poll on the...
I don't know, it's kind of difficult.
Scully, of course.
Yeah?
Scully, yes.
Yeah.
She reminds me of Kate Winslet.
Mulder.
I think...
Mulder has a very fascinating personality,
mm-hmm.
actually.
It's for me, it's very difficult to choose, because I want to become Scully.
They can't be separated, actually. They create one
mm-hmm.
picture together.
So, the case of the lost sausage part... Is it 4 already?
Mm-hmm.
I guess so, yeah.
Oh, right, part 4. The moment the door to the Cooper's office closed behind their backs, Arthur and Lola started their typical wait for any onlooker conversation, which indeed sounded like a one-way talk, but that was just what outsiders heard. In reality, Lola always dominated their conversations, though it was only natural, for she was the smartest. No one ever dared to deny it. Sometimes I say I regretted that people would never be able to appreciate the eloquence of her most unusual dog, but immediately decided it was for the best. There were times I got the impression she was winning an argument, but it was never even close to reality. In fact, most of the time, Lola played her like a fiddle, just to prove herself right again and again. However, it was more convenient that for mortals, Lola was just another cocker spaniel. Maybe a bit silly and light-minded, but what do you expect from a creature named after Nabokov's empty-headed nymphet? They got into their battered minivan, the colour of which was almost indecipherable, so many times was it painted and repainted. But it was definitely somewhere in the red spectrum. Some brats once scratched out words, "Kids welcome," on its rare doors, but they too faded away as flakes of paint peeled off the raw metal surface. Though, if anyone actually cared to look inside, they would find nothing but some old garbage, namely empty soda cans, beer bottles, dog food packaging, and misshapen pieces of stale sandwich bread. At first, that is. For all this was there for a reason. The reason being to disguise the elaborate equipment used by the two in their shady business of spying, wiretapping, and hacking. But overall, it was a typical, by New York standards, minivan, ignored by naturally indifferent locals. Now, this four-wheeled Old Trout was moving towards a dilapidated house in the heart of Bronzeville. Whoa, who do we have here if not Agent J and Agent K? One of the three almost absurdly geeky men greeted Arthur and Lola. Want some? The second man offered a joint. He wore his long blonde hair in a ponytail fastened by a pink sparkly rubber band. No, Bob, we're in business, snapped Arthur. But thanks for sharing. It means a lot coming from you. Hey, you're my buddy, bud, Bob said. Lola wants some, though. I can see it in her eyes. She's temporarily laid off recreational drugs. Asha made herself comfortable in a huge armchair. Moving on to something more serious, eh, sister? Bob joked, but Asha couldn't help noticing a glimmer of interest in the eyes of her dog. "We know about the sausage," interrupted the third man, who looked the scruffiest of all. His face seemed to be nothing but one big beard, and his t-shirt one big stain, whose origin Asya didn't want to know. "Sausage?" she asked, and again that look of comprehension and annoyance in Lola's eyes that said, "You're really slow to grasp things, aren't you?" Someone or something was definitely in the room with our poor mayor fellow, tore him to pieces, left us his carcass and intestines, and, as if that hadn't been enough, for one day shamelessly gobbled one of the sausages, leaving almost no DNA or fingerprints, the bearded man summed up. "Almost, but not quite," he smirked. "Spit it out, Dick. I don't have a whole day." Asya felt anger mounting up her throat. Then she felt Lola poking her in the ribs, telling to shut up. "You will have to start paying us for this, Asya," said the first man, who looked almost normal with his glasses, a striped shirt and a neat tie. Save for an ugly scar that stretched all over the left side of his face, scuffing up half of his ear and disappearing beneath the shirt. He claimed the scar went right down to his very heel, but no one ever cared to check that. Asya doubted anyone ever would, especially a person of the opposite sex. Or any sex, to be honest, and not necessarily human. "You do your job, Eric," she replied. "You work for the police, police works for me. Hence, you work for me." "Cooper would hang you from your non-existent balls for saying he works for you," remarked Eric. "Whatever, cut to the chase." "Okay," Dick shrugged his shoulders. "As you say, milady." The post-mortem that Eric here so graciously performed showed the wounds had likely been inflicted with hands and teeth. But you can imagine the force it would require. This makes it a bit improbable for the official report, so it just says torn wounds. This sounds like it could shed some light onto the whole affair, but no saliva, no clear teeth marks, no nails, all well and clean until we found this beauty. The light reflected from the metallic surface of the small object Dick held out in his gloved hand. "You can see why we decided to conceal it from the officials," his voice suddenly serious. Asya put on a plastic glove and took it from him. The object turned out to be a strangely shaped piece of metal with uneven edges, the engraving read Lita, with a set of numbers placed below. "Impossible," was the only thing that came out of Asya's mouth. "You know the protocol," said Eric. "We cannot withhold that information forever. You gotta act quickly." To be continued.
Wow. So what does Lita mean?
Oh, it's Lolita, and the numbers is your phone number.
Yeah, okay. And why do you think Nabokov's Lolita was an empty-headed?
No, it's just that. No, it's...
absolutely not empty-headed.
I know.
I wouldn't have told my dog.
Okay, no, it's just a stereotype.
I thought at 15 everybody is empty-headed. Why not? Well, Alita was not.
I don't agree with you. I think it depends on people. Mm. Some people are empty-headed even at 35.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have already a lot of things in their head even if at 10.
Mm-hmm.
It's very individual, I guess.
It's sad, actually.
I guess, I think it depends on a person, and then secondly, it depends on a situation.
On the environment, everything, yeah. I wouldn't call myself an empty-headed girl at 15. I think I was pretty...
I was stupid at 15.
Well, I didn't say I wasn't stupid, but I don't think that I was empty-headed. I think I had a lot of things going on in my head. Now I'm kind of a... used to life, but at 15... I had a lot of questions.
That's nice.
And I tried to shed some light on things. So, I guess at 15 I was smarter than I am now. More rebellious, more uneasy than now.
Mm-hmm.
So
restless.
Restless,
yeah.
Yes.
I like this word.
I like the German word. And I forgot it.
How could you?
I just always liked this word, Unruhe.
Unruhe.
That was in one of the X-Files. That was in one of the X-Files episodes. Alright, dear listeners, you have 3 questions to answer. This is your homework.
okay.
And we love you.
Yeah, we do.
Have a wonderful weekend.
Yeah. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Lots of books and discussions at www.lingvistov.ru.